What did y'all think of the movie?
Oh, that's a good idea. I'd say overall, for like it entertainment factor, give it an 8, my opinion.
James.
Yeah, I was thinking about 7 or 8. Yeah, about there. Pretty good.
It is the most fun I've had watching a movie in like, gosh, probably the last 4 or 5 years, or like especially going to the theaters also, but I haven't been to the theaters all that much, but this was, yeah, it definitely met that.
Oh, yeah, I'll just say I probably rate it a 9 or a 10, honestly. I mean, maybe not a 10 because that would be perfect, but I'd say 9 just because I from the role playing in Dungeons and Dragons and stuff I'd done, especially a lot more when I was younger, it was kind of nostalgic to that. And also, I just thought the special effects, the acting, well, most of the acting, and the story was really good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the writing was good, the acting was good, and now has anyone seen the first Dungeons and Dragons movie they made? I think it was like maybe the early 2000s or late 90s. The set was gaudy, over the top, ostentatious. In this sense, in this Dungeons and Dragons movie, the way they did the set and everything like that, they kept it realistic enough, the right amount of like nature, like there was actually dirty leaves on the ground and stuff like that. In a sense that, in some ways, they actually, in my opinion, did better than Lord of the Rings, because in Lord of the Rings, every set was so uniform, it was so perfect. Even if it was a dungeon, it was a perfect dungeon. It was just so clean. Even if it was supposed to be dirty, it was just so uniform and meticulous. So in that sense, it looked to me like a believable fantasy setting, and I definitely props on that, because not a lot of fantasy movies get that right.
That is
I think
true.
it's tough to beat Lord of the Rings for true rich and deep backstory. But I did appreciate, of course, that they kept the very beginning, the map pans over Icewind Dale, which is kind of a famous dungeon and or a famous adventure, and also was a computer game. And then I think you can get it on tablets now. They talked about Baldur's Gate, which is a very famous dungeon and computer game. So there were lots of references, and I had a lot of fun trying to identify the spells and the creatures, like the displace of beasts, because I played with a dungeon master who was pretty strict when I first played. So we never got super high level because he was too strict. It's like, oh, that's 14 experience points. It's like, dude, come on. Right? But it was for me just fun to see, okay, the time stop, the magic missile, like the actual, because I guarantee you they looked at every single spell. They looked at its radius, they looked at its distance, even the hither thither, right? So they had a real framework of magic to work with. And that was pretty cool. And I'm sure somebody will or has already maybe done an analysis of every spell and how they got every detail correct, which is really neat.
Now, see, I did not know any of that. Like, all any of my Dungeons and Dragons knowledge comes from an old, like, Shattered Lands. Did you ever play that? It was a different, I think, I don't know what they call it in Dungeons and Dragons, like a different setting. But anyways, it was this old computer game I played when I was a kid, and it had like the Dungeons and Dragons like rules and settings and stuff like that. And it was like kind of walk around RPG, and that's where I got a lot of my information from. And but no, is that what that panther thing was? Is that a displacer beast? Because I recognized it, but I
Yeah,
couldn't
if I
name it.
remember rightly, yeah, it's the thing that had these weird tentacles that Izzy just loved those thrills. She
No,
wanted to
I
tickle
hated
them and rub
them.
her face in them. What?
I did not like
What?
them.
Izzy, I've already ordered you a displacer piece to put with your ducks.
Look, I didn't
In
care
fact,
about
it's two for the price of one. I don't know how
I
that
didn't care,
works.
like, the cat panther aspect of it was fine, but like those like tentacle-ish things at the top with all the spikes were creepy. I did not like them.
Actually, basically, I just got a panther and put jellyfish on its ears. So it's close, though. It's very close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the details of the backstory and all of that was very good. I thought the movie opened a bit. Yeah, it's a bit of a cliche. It's like, oh, here's the tough. Oh, first of all, I thought it was pretty funny that he was knitting. By the way, spoiler, spoiler,
Yeah,
spoilers. All right.
spoilers. I
But
don't know
yeah,
who
I
would click
just
on
I.
a movie review if they don't expect to get spoilers. If you have clicked on this, you deserve any spoilers you're about to hear.
So he's knitting, and can I just, Izzy, do you mind if I just drop in my quick theory of
Yes,
opposites?
go ahead.
Okay, so I think that, I mean, this is a bit of the woke agenda and all of that, which again, you can't, you can't really expect to avoid that. And I think they avoided it to a large degree, but they're playing with opposites, right? So the big, strong, tough, handsome, square-jawed, perfect-haired hero doesn't fight, right? So he's playing against type, right? He's not, what is he? He's not a I guess you could say he's like a bard or something, but he's not a fighter. He's not a thief. He's not a magic user. He's not a cleric. So the fact that the hero doesn't really have any skills, and they kind of make fun of this over the course of the movie. Like, well, what are you bringing to the table here? It's like, well, I come up with plans when, oh, so your first plans fail. It's like, it was kind of funny, right? Yeah. So they're playing against type that the major, the star and the center of the story doesn't have any particular abilities, I thought was kind of
now,
kind of neat. And so that's, yeah.
I'm sorry, wasn't he a bard though? Because he was like, he was getting, keeping up the morale and he played the lute.
No, but bards have magic in D&D. They have spells. They can summon creatures. They can put people to sleep with their music.
Oh.
They're Ray Conniff. So bards aren't just like guys who go around having plans. Everybody can have plans, right? They have I never played a bard, and I think it even came in after I was playing, but I know that they have charm creature, charm person. They have like the different spells of mind control and so on.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he had nothing. He had nothing. All he could do was glitch weirdly, which I thought was a hilarious scene, by the way. But so the main hero has nothing to bring to the table. And normally the square-jawed guy is the big fighter, right? So he's knitting at the beginning, which is kind of emasculating but kind of funny. And, of course, the big fighter is the Michelle Rodriguez character, mm-hmm. right? And she kind of plays the same. And see, what did you notice when they were singing?
Her voice was deeper than his.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think she was singing the lower part.
Yeah, the lower part.
Because Chris Pine is actually a pretty fine singer. He's done duets with Barbara Streisand, and like he's actually a pretty... He was in a musical. I can't remember what it was called, but Into the Woods? Was it Into the Woods? Something like that. Agony! Anyway, so the opposites, right? So the main guy is not a fighter, doesn't really have anything to bring to the table, even though he's supposed to be the hero. The hero is supposed to be the best fighter. He's supposed to be the best at something, and this guy wasn't much good at anything, so that was kind of going against type. Then, of course, you have the typical against type that the most ferocious and best fighter is a woman, right?
Yeah.
That's been a cliche forever, mm-hmm. right? So, and then you have the black guy who's a wizard, and I thought he was really good in the role. Like that stammering guy who was really doubts himself all the time and so on. Like the Hamlet.
He did a good job.
The Hamlet with sparkly fingers. Yeah, he was good. But that's kind of playing against type. Because normally wizards are kind of arrogant, and this guy was like really kind of self-effacing. And it's a little bit playing against type because, you know, young black men often are perceived to have not a deficiency of self-confidence. And so they're kind of playing against type that way, which I thought was kind of neat. Oh, yes. I think the only attractive woman in the entire movie. Izzy, who was that?
The only attractive woman in the whole movie, you said?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the elf or the druid, or the redhead one.
Yeah, the redheaded girl with the pointy ears. So she was really pretty and really charismatic and kind of arrogant, and yet she was super interested in world politics and constantly wanted to change her shape to be something different. Right now that's a little bit playing against type, that the prettiest girl in the environment is super into world politics and wants to be anything. Wants to be everything other than a pretty girl. Like, why would a pretty girl choose to change her shape, right? So, again, that's sort of playing against time. And who am I?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. It seems like a lot of attractive young ladies these days are quite taken and get taken in by the kind of the woke stuff. And, like, you see there's all these before and after pictures. My daughter, before she went to college, and then afterwards, like, oh, good grief, what happened, you know?
No, I get that for sure, but just in the world that they have.
Yeah.
Normally the prettiest girl is the helpless damsel in distress who doesn't know anything about anything. It just exists to scream, be pulled off by the monster, and rescued by the square-jawed main guy, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're playing against type because she's got the speech, which I thought was kind of like, you know, the sort of the controversies about the 2020 election, where she's saying, yes, but he stole the election and then punished anyone who dared to question it. I'm like, huh, why does this seem vaguely familiar to me in some abstract manner?
Yeah.
So yeah, she's super into world politics. She understands, you know, if we don't take a stand here, we're going to lose everything. And again, to me, it's just a little bit playing against type. Now, who am I? I'm forgetting someone.
So are you getting Simon, the wizard guy?
Forge?
Oh, no, he talked about him.
Let's see.
The con man guy or somebody else?
Well, the con man guy, the Hugh Grant character, right?
Yeah, first of all,
Hugh Grant. I mean, it's called sunscreen, man. The last thing, he's looking like all kinds of Lance Hendrickson crumpled paper face at the moment. But he's got to be in his, mid-60s now? Early 60s?
Oh, not sure.
Like that. But no, so he kind of came and went. Was there only four main guys? What do I have? I remember seeing?
Well,
I'm forgetting someone.
Kira, his daughter, if you want to count her as a main character?
No. I mean, of the adventurers.
Was it the paladin guy who he was only there for, like, part of the quest?
The paladin guy.
Is that him?
Is he?
Is that the guy you're thinking of?
Izzy, tell us your thoughts on the paladin guy.
His armor had abs on it.
His armor had abs? I was like, I was dying in my
Me
seat.
Too.
It's like, I am so manly, I do sit-ups in my armor and give them abs.
he was great. I don't know. I actually think he was hilarious. I don't know. Like, every scene that guy was in, I found funny. It was just the complete lack of, like, normal human speech or reaction or anything. He was just like,
oh, he doesn't do colloquialisms, he doesn't do cliches, and just because you have abandoned your vows doesn't mean your vows have abandoned you. And what did the main guy say?
Okay, bye.
No, he said no, just because that sentence is symmetrical doesn't mean it makes any sense.
I thought you meant the other one.
No, the other one was like, when faith is waning and doubt is waxing, I find it helpful to lean upon the words of our ancestors who, and what does the guy say?
He just says, bye.
See you later, that's what he
says. See you later.
And what's more perfect, everybody's watching that guy walk away, and listen, this happens all the time. I am leaving this quest, and what happens?
He just walks in a straight line.
And everyone's thinking, okay, where is he going? He's just walking down the beach. And Chris Pine is like, yeah, he's just going off on a... Oh, he's coming up to a rock. Oh, what's he going to do? Oh, my, is he going to go around? No, straight over the rock. And even in the very background of the next scene, you could still see the guy walking away in the distance. I like that commitment to a bit.
How he
I think
just
that's
went
funny.
All the way over the rock. Like, that was hilarious. It reminds me, I've seen a few videos of people, like, I think if your car will, like, if the roof front of your car is in the crosswalk, some people just keep walking straight over it. Now, obviously, I don't know if those are staged because I've only seen it on videos, but they just go right over the car if it's in their path.
Oh, like, or if it's a convertible, they'll just go, like, walk over the front, like, inside or whatever, right? That's pretty funny. So, yeah, so I thought they were playing quite a bit with opposites.
Yeah.
And except for the con man becoming a politician, that was not the opposite.
No, not at all.
The opposite at all. That was just like, that's like straight up.
What did you think about?
So, yeah, I liked the playing with opposites. So anyway, that was sort of my big opposite theory, but go ahead.
Me and James were talking about, like, how much they broke the fourth wall or not. Like, I think they did a good job of kind of threading the needle, because as you're, like, watching the story play out, you can see how it could be a group of people playing these characters in this fantasy world, because, like, within the first 10 minutes of the movie, like, the cynical side of myself was like seeing all the woke stuff, like the superhero woman, and being like, oh gosh, is this gonna be, like, you know, is this all I'm going to be watching? Is this going to be a 2-hour political commercial?
But
I was like, okay, the way I kind of released myself from that, like, this is a fantasy world, none of this has to make sense. Like, you know, the superhero woman, it's a fantasy world. And, like, that kind of released me from that the whole way.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I think this woman was a little bit of an exception. Like, her voice was so deep, she probably had more testosterone than all the characters combined. So, I mean, I was just going to say, if there is going to be a superhero woman, it's, at least it's not, like, makeup covered dress wearing Wonder Woman, you know?
Well, yeah, like, yeah, they did a good,
like,
job.
She really looked the part, you know?
They picked the right girl, but I know, like, I mean, just the, you know, the strength division between men and women, even if a woman's, like, the same size or bigger than a man, those muscles fire differently.
Yeah.
She's not going to be taking out, like she, you know, in one scene, she, like, beats up, what, four or five knights and, you know, stuff like that. It's like, oh, okay.
Oh, more. Yeah. Yeah, and but she has a brick. So yeah. And a potato. So that's just
oh my
fine.
God,
but here's the thing too. So no, go ahead.
When she threw the potato at the guy's face in slow motion. I died. I was so funny.
But she also, and this is where the movie kind of got me in the feels, which is we saw a play not too long ago called Steel Magnolias, which actually quite a moving play in some ways. Mm-hmm. But and that kind of got me in the feels. And this one, so the scene where she goes back to the trash village, they had to go and get something. I can't remember what. And she's got this tiny husband, mm-hmm. right? Or ex-husband. Is that right?
Yep.
Yes.
And so, I mean, okay, you're playing with size. It's kind of funny. So he's this kind of half hobbit thing, or like half a hobbit almost. And then he's got this giant of a wife. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously kind of a joke about emasculation. And I get all of that. And there was a certain amount of that going on.
Yeah.
As a whole, right? The men are all dominated by women, right? Because even the mayor is dominated by the red wizard woman, right? So, yep. But what I thought was interesting was they go back. She has this scene with her ex-husband, and it's really, it's actually quite sad and moving. So first of all, she's this, you know, supposed to be this hero and all of that, but she's a terrible human being in relationships.
Yeah.
Right? She abandoned him. She was drunk. Like, she was just, so she has this, you know, like a lot of really aggressive people, she can't have any relationships really. And this sort of coldness and this distance and whatever trauma is like, don't touch me, don't hug me, don't kiss me, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? So I thought it was interesting. They actually had quite a moving conversation about what went wrong in their relationship. And I was like, what the hell is happening here? Like,
yeah,
it's just wild. I mean, that level of narrative spread where you've got these ridiculous jokes that are making fun of the entire hero genre, which are very funny and very well done. And then you've got this bizarre, like, it's almost like sliced out of another story, which is all like an emotional drama piece about what went wrong with our relationship. It was actually quite touching and moving, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that. There were several scenes that it seemed like for character backstories and motivation and stuff like that, they got the psychology and the relationship aspect. They did better than most movies, in my opinion.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciated the intelligence of the dialogue. The jokes were funny.
Oh, yeah.
Like the references were funny and just into, because of course they've done their research. They know that Dungeons and Dragons is like, most people are at least a standard deviation above the norm in IQ. And they've done all of those studies. They know their target audience, and they know if they dumb it down too much, it'll be unappealing to people who don't play Dungeons and Dragons and would be too dumbed down for the people who do. I mean, everybody I played Dungeons and Dragons with went on to become like professors and entrepreneurs and writers, and you know, they're all very smart people. And maybe that was a little bit of an outlier, but as a whole, it's, you know, highly intelligent, highly verbal group. And Dungeons and Dragons can be hysterically funny. Izzy and I had a dungeon, like a role playing thing, not too long ago, where she went to the island of the Uber chats.
Oh my gosh,
it was hilarious. Like, what happened was they were so manly that when they shook people's hands, they oozed testosterone to the point where they'd leave the other person's hand actually hairy. And they were that manly. And what were their names again?
I think we named one. One was Chad, and the other, their last names were girly. So it was Chad Primrose and Giga Primrose.
Giga Primrose.
So yeah, so it can be very funny. I remember two of the players had a kind of feud with each other, and one of them fell into a pit that was about to be set on fire and demanded that he be rescued, and the other guy rescued him by shooting an arrow through its leg and pulling him to safety.
It can be
quite funny in a way. But so I think the fact that we saw, oh God, what did we see ads for? There was some ridiculous Transformers movie with a robot King Kong.
The Turtle Ninja one. Robot King Kong was the, what's it called?
There was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was like unbelievably stupid.
Yeah.
Like, and not even fun stupid, just like, what? And I know it's kind of like a kid's movie, but it's kind of not. And it's just like, that was just stupid. Cowabunga, dude. And then they had this Transformers movie with the Metal Harambe or whatever. Like, it's just like, oh my god! I literally said to Izzy, like, I'm losing brain cells just watching this stuff.
Oh my god!
And then we get to a pretty intelligent, delicately done, fun, witty movie with surprising depth, and I was just like, oh, I'm saved.
I know.
I'm saved from, like, the general culture.
The trailers. There was one. I forget exactly which one it was. It comes out. No, the Mission Impossible one seemed okay, but.
Yeah, it seemed okay.
Apparently, they're making another one. It's coming out in July. Like, bro, Tom Cruise is like 60 or something. Like, why is he making action movies?
He's not done running.
No, for me, Mission Impossible is just running up some stairs. But for him, I guess it's a little different. Yeah. I guess he's got a lot of juice going. But go ahead.
But there, I forget exactly which one it was. But we saw it and we were just dying. Like, we were laughing at how bad it was. I forget which one, though, because I don't think it was the Transformers one. But it probably,
I can't remember, but it was all just completely dumb stuff. And then this movie, I was a little concerned with how it started. Also, I don't know what it is. I have a little bit of trouble hearing some of the dialogue in movies, so I really had to kind of concentrate on what we were saying. I probably got a little bit lazy because I watched with subtitles at home or whatever, but I was like, okay, this is okay. So she's beating up the orc and all that. And I thought the self-referential jokes were great, like at the beginning when he crashes through that window. With the eagle guy, Jonathan. Yeah. And then at the end, when the mayor tries to do the same thing, but they bricked it up. I mean, I thought that stuff was really clever. Yeah. Did you guys stay past the credits at all?
No, we didn't.
No. Go ahead, James.
Oh, so I did. I said there's no way they're leaving this without something at the end, right? So, of course, do you remember what there was at the very end?
At the very end. So, you know the guy who was being asked the five questions that they left?
Yeah.
Can someone please ask me another question in a British accent? Really sad.
Yeah, the zombie who couldn't get be released until the fifth question at the very end after the credits was like, anyone? Two more questions is all I'm asking.
Yeah.
And that I thought that was very funny. Right. So I thought that was well done. And Izzy, then she, it was just horrible. She fell asleep during the whole dragon thing.
Oh my gosh.
So very fat sad. Dragon.
Oh my gosh, I probably have not laughed that hard in a long time. When he
said, it's the dragon that just keeps coming.
The dragon must have found a new lair, and the guy says, what did he eat the last one?
Yeah.
I was laughing so hard, I didn't even hear what they said for the next, like, 30, 40 seconds. It was, I think way past the funny part. It was really bad.
I think the dragon delivered on completely unexpected. It looked like this menacing, kind of like terrifying dragon. You could see its face. And then, like, as it kind of comes out of the cave, it's got these big old fat jaws, which I've never seen on any depiction of a dragon.
They weren't jaws. They were jowls.
Jowls, yeah.
More chins than a Chinese phone book.
Design choice. It looks like some kids thing you see in a kids cartoon kind of thing. Like, they always make the dragons really fat, right? In like kids' cartoons. I did not think of that in this, though. And then they actually start joking about it. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah,
this is like the red dragon, then the honey barbecue bag and dragon comes out. And I was actually kind of annoyed because, you know, they always have these monsters emerging from their caves, and they make them more scary or intimidating by having them smash all the stalagmites and stalactites as they come out.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, come on. Like, I mean, every time I leave my house, I don't, like, smash the door frame open. Like,
I mean,
sometimes, not every time.
Smash him every time. It would have done it once and then done, right?
Yeah. So the fact that it was some new dragon. Now, I don't know the etymology of the Underdark. It's some realm. I didn't know why, like, what was down there. Why did the paladin have these undead guys he fought with? I missed
it
that whole backstory.
Cool.
Maybe it was explained.
It was lightsaber-ish things. It was cool.
I think
it was definitely a cool fight scene, but I kind of missed out on why he had to fight the undead who were just going to come back to life. What's the point? I mean, just run away, because they had to run away anyway. So I didn't really understand the whole fight since they'd just come back to life.
Now, was it that I went to the restroom, so I missed that scene, but I thought that didn't the red queen or the red wizard woman send, like, an undead guy after them? The guy with the green sword?
They had a moment where there's someone watching them as they were going to the Underdark, right?
Yeah. So,
oh, somebody who was pursuing them?
Yeah, there was somebody who was, I don't know if it was the Sophia, was it Sophia her name? The
Red Witch.
The Red Witch, yeah.
The
Red Wizard, I believe it was that they showed somebody watching them through a spyglass as they just before they went to the Underdark.
Well, and that's the same guy that got off the boat and met her, and then she's like, "These guys let them get away." And he turned around and killed all five of them.
I think so. Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. So he was after to chase them. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense.
I don't know if this doesn't matter for your point about why do they fight him, because if they're just undead, they're just going to get up anyways. But I think that they were like the turned people from his race. The paladin.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, should we deal with the wokiest of wokey elements?
Yes.
I didn't get the chance to mention earlier. The woke is kind of what knocked it down for me, but otherwise it was really enjoyable. I didn't get the chance to say that, so I want to say that.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
So, what does the movie? Okay, everybody, just chime in here. What does the movie say about your people having your people, your tribe, your group?
Ooh. Mm. Huh.
You don't.
Yeah. Your people.
Oh no, you
people.
Do. Everybody has their backstory with their people, tribe, their group, and how does it go?
Badly. You have to make your own group.
Yeah.
Single time.
So having your people, having your group. I mean, the woman who was the fighter was kicked out of her group and ended up. I don't know. It was so disastrous for her. She had to marry a man who came up to her shin or something like that. Like that's how that, and that's especially humiliating for women. The guy who was the keeper or whatever his name was, the spy thing that he had at the beginning. He had his group, and they didn't pay him, and it was a complete disaster, and he betrayed. The paladin had his I don't know, some kind of group that didn't seem to work out that well. So everybody had a group that he was kicked out of and didn't like, and then at the end. What's the story? Are you going to go back to your people? It's like, no, you're my people. You disparate group, right? Yeah. So it's really bad to have a group or a tribe or a people that you come from. And I think that's just kind of one of the woke things is that war comes from tribalism. So everybody just has to have no allegiances to anyone except people they go on adventures with or whatever, right? But there's no group, no tribe, no, and this is just kind of like a woke thing, comes out of the Second World War in many ways, because they think it was tribalism that caused it rather than, say, I don't know, communism. But so, yeah, I thought that was one of the wokiest elements. Like, you can't have a people. My God, that would be a disaster. Because it is. Everybody's on the flight from their people and blah, blah, blah. Because, I mean, and that's part of a narrative thing. Like, because if you had your people, you wouldn't have to assemble a group of, you know, lovable rogues to have your adventure. You just have your people go, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it makes everybody's rootless, which, I mean, leads for more adventures, but less stable societies to have kids in.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Good point.
What did you think of the bit where she says to, the first time that he reunites with his daughter, Kira, the Harper guy?
Yeah.
The ex-Harper guy. And she, like, is very cold to him. I forget exactly what she says, but she just said how exactly it goes, but she says something like, because you didn't say it was your fault, like, you know, why are you still upset? Not exactly why you're still upset, but that kind of question, and you're acting like it's not your fault. That's what she said. And then later it seems like, I guess this sort of goes to the character, how the character development went through. I felt like he kind of arrived at that at least, but I don't know, like, what you thought about that part.
Kind of arrived at.
Sorry, that he arrived at, like, realizing that, like, admitting at least that was his fault. Like, it wasn't like he didn't know, but he was actually, okay, I'm going to admit it now.
Well, it was like.
No, because originally he said, you know, like, I left you. His ownership was, I left you to resurrect your mother.
Right, yeah.
Now, at the end, he says what his fault was that he stole,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And so he was not able to admit his own culpability, and then he was, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's certainly progress, right? Which is to say, here's the causality, right?
Yeah.
Because, of course, he could have just quit being a keeper, right? I think
Harper.
A Harper, yeah.
A Harper, sorry. Oh, Harper, because it's like a stringed instrument, like a lute. So he could have just quit. Because he wasn't getting paid, right? There's a scene where he's like, I asked him nothing in return. He's eating some, like, horrible bone broth or whatever. Although I thought the cottage they lived in was pretty nice.
It was.
But so he's saying, you know, well, being a hopper sucks because I don't get any money, so I'm going to steal. And it's like, well, why didn't you just quit being a hopper? Because you did anyway.
Yeah.
So if you're capable right. of quitting, just quit the hoppers and go get a job, right? Or whatever it is, right? So, yeah, he was greedy and he stole. And the wizards then obviously, you know, tracked him down, his wife down and killed his wife or whatever, right? So, yeah, he did take ownership and responsibility about that. I thought it was interesting how the mayor was poison pilling the daughter, like the kid, about her dad, right? And because he's the government, it's like, okay, so the government is poison pilling spouses or husbands or fathers. And I think that's like, I know it's a huge stretch because there's nothing about it in the movie, but yeah. I think that's an unconscious nod at the Fuller family court system, which incentivizes this kind of trash talking.
Well, interesting.
And putting down the
pot. Well, and he did explicitly say, like, oh, so you've been poisoning her against me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that was kind of an analogy for like single mothers, I want to say, which is funny because none of them were like related, but I mean, it was just how like, not even that, or just divorced parents, because if you have two different parents raising kids, then they're going to kind of point them against each other to try and gain as a favorite, if you know what I mean.
They can't, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Or, I mean, they won't always, but often, I think. I mean, if you're kind of the type of person who's going to get divorced or whatever, it's probably going to end up like that.
Fair.
I love the bit with the tea. Have you ever had a conversation with somebody who's just really distracted by some inconsequential detail?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry,
like,
yeah, we get it. Continue.
Yeah, and so his advisor cools it down with her finger, and it's such a British thing. This was so, because of course Hugh Grant is like quintessential British guy, right? Yeah. And it was such a British thing. It's like, oh, I wasn't quite sure you were going to put your finger in there. I'll set that aside for later.
I'll set that aside for later.
It was like, that was, and those kinds of details, and they're called bits in theater. Like I have a bit about, I'll do a bit about the tea. The tea's too hot or whatever, right? I, you know, Izzy and I disagree on this. I think that that stuff was ad-libbed. And they just decided not totally ad-libbed, like they probably filmed it and he threw it in and like, oh no, let's film it again, like let's make that a bit, and then let's put the finger in, like I think they kind of, and the, like the walking away in a straight line, maybe that was ad-libbed and they decided to, you know, reshoot it and keep it in, and because it's hard for me to imagine that would be in the script, but I guess it could be. I mean, it seems so spontaneous and unusual and organic and natural. It was just really great.
Could have been. I thought scenes like that were like where the paladin's walking in a straight line. That was just on the line for breaking the fourth wall a bit for me. So it's like he's the quintessential paladin, but also kind of an NPC. And like as James was talking about, like, well, that could be the guy that's playing the paladin, like gets up and goes home or has somewhere to be, and the paladin is just now walking off in a straight line. You know.
Well, I think, I mean, from a narrative standpoint, you had to get rid of him.
Yeah.
Because he was too powerful.
Yeah, he was.
And so he would make it too easy.
That makes sense.
Right. I mean, it's like in Star Wars, you had to get rid of Obi-Wan Kenobi because otherwise he would just ride with Luke and guide the torpedo into the Death Star bowels with the Force or something like that, right? So it's great to have a really powerful character. It makes for a really dramatic middle part of the story, but you got to get rid of him for the final thing, otherwise it doesn't. There's not enough tension because he's just too powerful.
Yeah, and that kind of maybe he wasn't like a, like I was thinking like in the context of a campaign, like they're doing their four character party thing, and they bring some other guy in, it's like inserting him, and then he leaves. But it could also just been like if the dungeon master just bringing in that character as the dungeon master character, and then he just walks off.
Yeah,
because the dungeon master is like, I have to get you through the middle act. And the really exciting thing's at the end, so I'm just going to give you this powerful character to get you through the middle act, and then you go sort of on to the end or whatever.
Yeah,
right. There was, can I just say this? When he comes up at the end, and I said this to Jared at the time, he comes up at the end and comes up to the con man after he trips over with his big old goblet, and I said, do you think he walked in a straight line all the way from that first scene?
Yeah, probably. Well, and that's the analogy, right? Because being virtuous, I played a paladin for many years, so this is one character I know pretty well, is that, you know, they call it like walking the straight and narrow path of virtue.
Right.
So, I mean, this is a nod. So he doesn't do analogies or colloquialisms, but he actually lives one. Like it's actually this. And this is where I thought the intelligence of the movie really shone through, and it must have been just so much fun for the writers to have, like, to not say, oh, well, no one's going to get that joke or whatever, right? I mean,
yeah.
So, yeah, I just thought that that level of sort of play and yet and quite serious. Mm. I thought for sure that Chris Pine, because his hair was perfect. First of all, he's got the most inflatable hair in Hollywood that's not a straight-on Kaepernick afro. Like, it's just, it's so big. It's like it's his genuine side-swept helmet that's always perfect. And I thought that when he came out of the gelatinous cube at the end, the first thing he'd do was check his hair, but I missed that one.
I didn't catch that would be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, Izzy, did there something else you wanted to add about the middle?
Well, not even exactly the middle. I was just going to say, I'm very surprised at how little injured they were by the gelatinous cube thing. It's like, I'm going to call her the druid, yeah. When she stuck her hand in, she was like, oh, that burns, right? And she took it out immediately. And it also melted a guy within minutes. And then they're able to go in for a good, probably minute, I'd have to say. And they come out, their skin isn't even irritated. They're just like, it hurts a bit.
At least the main guy should have come out clean shaven. At least.
Yeah.
Well, they did add that when she pulled her hand out of it, she said, if I had been in there for another minute, I would have lost my hand. And maybe they were in there a total of a minute. But like, yeah, they definitely should have been more burned than they were. You know?
Yeah, they could have. I mean, it wouldn't even have been that hard. It wouldn't even have been that hard for them to act that. It just put on some blush or something. I don't know.
Or explain how, like, you know, it would have taken a little bit longer, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You had a thought.
I've got a thought. What do you think about the paladin, who is this paragon of virtue, being very boring and someone you don't want to talk to? Like, he's like they overtly point that out in the movie, where it's like, you're terrible, terrible to talk to. And then the paladin says something and he's just like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And just kind of leaves, you know.
Well, okay, so first of all, he's saying, and he said something I thought obviously very intelligent about him, like the main guy trying to resurrect his dead wife.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you're just, like, she's living on another plane right now. All you're going to do is pull her back from that plane. She's going to be disoriented and this and that and the other, right? Yeah. Now, of course, assuming, I mean, that's the reality of the universe, he's got a point.
No, I agree.
He's got, I mean, this is a huge way to avoid grieving. It's like, well, I could be really sad for my wife, or... I could, you know, spend years trying to bring her back to life. It's like, dude, you know, grieving is tough. It's not that tough. You know, like, you'll grieve. You'll get over it. You'll move on. We, you know, like Hamlet's father says, you know, your father lost a father. His father lost a father. Like, dude, chill with the grieving avoidance, right? And so the paladin has a point, and he does try to help when they're hopeless and so on, but they don't want to listen to his wisdom.
Yeah.
And that is interesting. I guess this community know a little bit about that.
I was going to say, world, right? Does that hit you at home, Steph?
No, not at all. as he walks off slowly in a straight line. And yeah, I mean, obviously the paladin, after trying to instill wisdom in the group that would have really helped them, what did he get? He got deplatformed. He just walked off. And so I'm afraid that I passed out for a little while during this part, but then Izzy acted out the next part of the movie for me on the way home.
So irony really cuts the sword that cuts the one who wields it or something like that.
But I tell you what.
Yeah. So, yeah. And the fact that he doesn't do all of this stupid witticisms and analogies. And also, I mean, what a great way to enter a character is like, so normally the cliche is, you know, saving a kitten, you know, like he's a brave firefighter, he saves a kitten. He actually saved a humanoid baby cat from a giant fish.
<That's right. laughs>
You know, like, talk about the fireman getting the kitten out of the tree. I just thought that was pretty kajit. I think I can't remember what they're called. I think that's from Skyrim, but yeah, so I thought that was pretty choice.
It was funny. It's like, what a Chad move.
The paladin's one-liners and some of the, like, witticisms, like, won me over for the writing. Like, that was the point in the movie where I'm like, okay, they did good, you know.
They did good, yeah. I thought the story was incredibly well constructed. It was very well constructed. So a thing I thought was interesting is that the way that the evil red wizards work is they... they lure people in with promises of entertainment, right? This was the two situations. They had a celebration in the first castle, and so they call people in for a celebration, and then from the air above them comes down this destructive stuff that turns child against parent, parent against child, and turns everyone into zombies who just serve the wizards, right?
Yeah.
Now, if that's not an analogy for communist propaganda, I mean, it's even red wizards, right? I don't even know what is.
Right?
Because
the communists take over. Yeah.
The communists take over with what? They take over with media and with entertainment, right? They poison the culture with media and entertainment. And that's, hey, we're going to bring the crowd together to watch a celebration, to watch the games, right? At the end, right? With the maze, the bread and circuses and so on. And then, yeah, we're going to destroy them, turn family against family, which is specifically what, like the struggle sessions where the parents are attacked by the children that happened in China and in Russia and so on. So I thought it was like, okay, this is pretty powerful stuff. And also, who is the transmitter in the modern, right? In the older one, it was male wizards who brought on this sort of propaganda that turned everyone into zombies who attacked each other. But in the new one, it was a female, right? Because women vote for the left. And it was a single female, unmarried single female. And these are the people who vote for left. They vote for the left. Well, right? I thought that there was depth and power in that analogy as a whole.
I totally missed that. Thank you very much for highlighting that. And on top of that, she was undead. She was a lich. And she had spite and hate for the living. Like, that is so on the nose.
And she shaved her head and had tattoos. And used way too much eye makeup. She was goth. So you know, this woke destruction of beauty thing.
Modern dating.
I love the bit where he's like, where the Hugh Grant annoys me as an actor because he's very witty and he's very charming, but he's always the same guy, you know, coming in kind of stoop-shouldered and blinky and all of that kind of stuff. And he was like, when he sees her without her hat, he's like, you might want to put that hat on. You might want to keep the hat, you know, because without it, it's a little, and just very, very sort of nicely done. But yeah, so it's an old belief system. It's got weird hair like the woke women. It's got goth eyebrows and what does it do? It starts off by manipulating the political system and the media, right? Because you've got she's in charge of the mayor and. Through the mayor, she's getting these games going again so she can gather all the treasure together. And it's satanic, of course, in a way, because she's like, hey, you can take all of the gold you want. I just want the souls of the people.
Yeah.
And that's, that's very demonic, right? Really? So that was, I thought, the propaganda thing I thought was very, very interesting. And of course, it comes out from the skies and in the air, that's like radio and TV used to be beamed through the air and all of that. So stuff coming down from the skies is usually stuff coming down from media. And I talked about this in my Hong Kong documentary, just how, you know, it all just turned citizen against citizen, parent against child, and they're just fantastic at working these divisions.
Well, yeah, so that is how communism spread is through the arts, you know, the arts into the universities, right. And yeah.
Well, and it's not uncommon for the people who aid communism to flee it and then get killed later on, right? That's the mayor, right? So, that was Trotsky.
Well, the mayor wasn't killed; he was captured in the end.
Oh, you're right. Sorry, he was captured. That's right, but only because he was found by a paladin. Anybody else would have
skewered
him with the goblet. But
yeah.
So I don't want to monopolize. If other people have any thoughts, I had one more thought about the insecure young wizard.
I
should
go ahead.
Okay, this story arc bothered me to no end.
Yes.
What's a skill? Let everyone chime off here. Like, what's a skill that you tried to master that you just weren't particularly good at?
Ooh.
One example for me is like drawing. I've tried to do it there and again. I mean, I haven't tried it in a really long time, but I'm just really not that good at it. You know, it's okay, but.
Right.
I'd say playing an instrument. I know it's one of those things, like, if I put enough time in, I just like, no, I'm not making that investment.
But it's a circular thing, because if you're making improvements, then you want to put the time in, but you don't have any particular natural talent. And you'll notice most guitarists have these like crazy long spider fingers, you know, like these full-on Brian May fingers. And I mean, that just helps a lot, right? The stubby fingers. There's a few, of course, like there are a few short basketball players, but it's not the norm.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about you, Iz?
For me, like, something that I have no inspiration to do, I guess.
Something that you did genuinely want to
right
get good at or get better at, but just never quite took for you.
That's a tough one. It could be rollerblading.
Well, you did do a little bit of piano when you were younger.
I never
make up some own. No, you made up a couple of songs here and there, and
I preferred going and just trying to make up my own tunes and just having fun with it than actually taking lessons. So I did not,
right?
Like back then, I did not want a what's it called, a piano, or try and learn how to do it or anything like that, right? So I didn't want piano lessons, kind of thing. So I'd say, I mean, it's not really a big thing because we just kind of gave it a try. But I'd probably say rollerblading because I thought it would be really cool, and then it's like. Not.
Yeah, it didn't really work out for you, yeah. Right? So, so drawing musical instruments, for me, it would be like playing guitar or whatever. I tried for a couple of months and I learned a couple of songs, but it was just like, oh, this is like kind of painful and difficult, and my fingers are too short and not really that enjoyable. And so,
well, it wasn't good.
And I tried.
Sorry, it wasn't good for me trying to do piano when I had the hands of an 8-year-old girl, tiny hands.
Right, right. As I still do. So, yeah, and I tried to get back into piano because I took some lessons when I was a kid when Izzy was doing it, and a little bit here and there. I sort of got back into reading the music and all of that, which I did when I was playing violin. Anyway, so sort of long story short, the young wizard with the helmet, right? And so he's got his helmet, and he's going back, and it's his great-great-grandfather who's holding him back.
Yeah.
And, you know, that could be an analogy for, you know, the problems with slavery and history and Jim Crow and so on, holding back the black community. I mean, it could be some sort of things like that. I thought that was an interesting analogy. But so he's an inexperienced wizard who's not particularly good at his craft, except in sort of weird emergencies where he gets his superpower, which is basically just adrenaline or fight or flight. But he's up against a world-destroying 300-year-old expert wizard, right?
Yeah.
And it turns out, funny story, the only thing he has to do is punch himself. And he gains like 40 levels or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Now, the reason I was asking about, like, is James, do you think that if you just, you punched a picture of your younger self, you'd suddenly be Michelangelo?
Yes.
I mean, that's like how it works, right? You know,
obviously.
Yeah, you're just standing in your own way, man. All I had to do was put my hands in a blender and I'd be really great at guitar. Obviously. Like, it's just, it's so annoying. Just this idea that, you know, you just have to believe in yourself. And suddenly, you know, like, I just have to believe that I can speak Japanese and I can speak Japanese. And this bothered me because this was a total break with convention, because D&D is very specific and very strict about this.
Okay.
That in order to become an expert wizard, you have to gain a lot. Like, so she's probably at least a 30th level wizard.
Oh, yeah.
And he's maybe 4th level, right? So he's got to gain a good 24 odd levels in order to be able to even remotely match her. And he still wouldn't have the experience that she has after 300 years.
Well, also.
But boy, if he just goes back and punches his imaginary great grandfather and gets out of his own way, he's got incredible knowledge of spells. He never had to learn them. He never had to practice them. He never had to get the reagents or the components for these spells. He's just like the hand spell. And I do you remember when, so there's the, oh, what was his hand was made of sand? Was her hand made of fire?
Yeah, it was like fire or lava or something.
Okay, so this is probably why they wouldn't never let me direct this movie. There's two things I would have thrown into that. Number one would be thumb wars, and number two would be rock, paper, scissors. No question. Like, there's no question I would do that at all.
That would have been hilarious.
And the rock part would be Dwayne Johnson. Anyway, so, but it just really bothered me, this idea that, well, you just have to believe and you have to get out of your own way, and suddenly you can be as good as someone who has 10 times your level of experience. Like, that's just not how, it's not how Dungeons and Dragons works. Now, if it was not a Dungeons and Dragons universe, I'd just put it up to this usual cliche thing that, you know, everything you need is within you. It's like, no, it's not. No, it's not. Not for specific external skills.
No.
You know, like, if I want to become a master carpenter, I don't just put on a helmet and punch my great-grandfather. It's like, everything you need is within you. It's like, no, it's not. You need to practice. You need to learn. You need to study. And the fact that he just leaped up 24 levels of experience or whatever, that just really bothered me, because it's such an insult to how much work it does take to become really, really good at things. I mean, I really only took great strides in philosophy after studying it for like 20 years, like literally 20 years from 16 to 36.
Yeah.
And maybe you could even argue a little bit longer than that, right? So, yeah, it takes a long time to become good at something. You don't just punch yourself, get out of your own way, and then magically have the ability to compete with people who've been doing it for 300 years. Like, I mean, that's just insane. So, yeah, that just bothered me because it doesn't tell people put in the work, slowly and patiently accumulate your skills, and then you'll have a breakthrough.
Yeah.
But you're just not going to have a breakthrough with some weird psychic trick. Well, anyway.
You've got this historic trauma, and if you can just identify that and, you know, put the responsibility in the right or something like that, then all is good, you know.
It's like the same thing like you see in these movies, like Ordinary People or whatever, where someone has a trauma, or the same thing in Good Will Hunting, you know, someone has a trauma and then they just have one big emotional outburst and everything is cured. It's like, nope, that's not how the brain works, man.
Drive off into the sunset.
Insights are great and crying about something that's sad is great, but that doesn't solve all your problems. I mean, there's a slow, patient work that you just have to go through in order to become good at something. I mean, to do the CGI, they didn't just pick some rando off the street and say, punch a picture of your great-grandfather and you'll be great. No, they took someone with 20 or 30 years dedicated experience to create a whole sequence that says, oh, you don't need any slowly and patiently accumulated wisdom or experience. You can just magically jump 24 levels. Sorry, this really bothers me because it's such a cliche in movies So Michelle, can somebody look up? I'm sorry. Can somebody just look up? Michelle Rodriguez is in her 40s because she was in the Fast and Furious like ages ago, right? How old is she? She's got to be in her mid 40s. If somebody can look that up. While they're doing that, Izzy, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say about the spell thing. I think that whole thing where he had to punch himself was for using the helmet more so than anything, because it really seemed like the helmet was the only thing that was causing that. He never had it before, and the helmet had magic in of itself. It just had some sort of barrier to getting to use it. But then again, that also wouldn't make sense, because later on he countered the time spell without the helmet and did the fist fight, I guess, without the helmet on.
Yeah.
And also one thing that I found completely ridiculous was in the time freeze spell at the very end that she did, that they only pretended to have work. She's lived for like 300 years, right? She's really good at sorceressness or whatever, right? Wouldn't she have noticed at least a little bit of the wind blowing in their hair, or the fact that Simon, the wizard guy, had a moving fireball thing in his hand that was combating the spell? It was floating around and moving, and I'm like, how is it time frozen if they have that? And I thought it was a CGI mistake before I realized it was actually a plot.
But that would be arrogance. She was so arrogant. But I also love the fact that her big victory, you know, the bad guy victory speech, like, we've beaten you finally and you're going to be subjugated to us for all. Thank God that was mercifully cut short, because if I have to hear another one of those in the course of my life, I'm going to scream.
Yeah. And Michelle Rodriguez is turning 45 this year. So
45. Okay, first of all, incredible athletics. Like, I mean, 45 is kind of pushing it for that level of athletics. I mean, of course, it's all fake, but that's still a lot of work to do those kinds of fight scenes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, kudos to her. Kudos to her for that. That was very, very impressive and very cool. But, you know, she's got some wear and tear, right? I mean, you could see she's got some wear and tear as a person. And the problem is that she doesn't really exercise. It's not like she warms up. She isn't like, guys, hold on. I got to do some stretches here because I'm in my mid-40s. And so she doesn't warm up. And she just, you know, the weekend warrior stuff, right? She's basically got a desk job, or maybe they ride horses or she walks around. So she doesn't really warm up. She does these unbelievably, horrifyingly intense physical things. And she's never out of breath. She never gets as much as a single scratch until the very end. And she's never limping. She never pulls anything. Like, I don't know. Again, I don't want to sound overly ridiculous because I know it's like a fantasy story. But if you're going to make a character older, she's got to be older. Right? So if you want somebody to never get injured and never have any physical problems, fine, make them 20. But if she's kind of weathered and she's doing these unbelievable stunts with no warm-up, never getting injured, and having zero physical problems, then you have a problem because she's too old to make that believable.
Fair, yeah.
And she, unless she was some sorcerer, in which case, like, but it would be like Alec Guinness, right, in Star Wars, right, Obi-Wan Kenobi doing these like weird flips and leaps. Like, it would just be like, okay, if you want a guy doing flips and leaps, then make him younger. But if you're going to make a woman in her mid-40s, I mean, she's going through menopause and she's headbutting guys with tin cans on their heads and not even getting a bruise. It's like, come on, this is like, it just got a bit silly. And I thought that one of the reasons that the movie was going to be funny in that sense was because, you know, like, I'm getting too old for this stuff, kind of, you know, cliches of like, you know, I'm not as young as I used to be. I can't do another battle or whatever it is. You know, just if you're going to make a woman in her 40s, mid 40s, yeah. And she looked even older in many ways, right? Because, you know, she was like pretty haggard and no makeup and all of that. So if you're going to make a woman that old and be this like incredible fighter, it's like, I think that there was an opportunity for some realism that could have really humanized the character, because basically she was just a superhero with very few lines, very little dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, true enough.
Yeah. I was going to say...
I love the speech on magic, though. Sorry,
is it going? When she got punched in the face, like, what was it called? Like, two or three times by some guys wearing, like, some guards wearing, like, metal armored gloves, right? Or whatever they are.
Uh-huh.
He didn't even get like a bruise or a cut or something.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He just didn't, like, what? I mean, I fell the other day on some sand and my knee got so cut. I mean, like, that's just not how it works. It was like dirty sand. It was like half sand, half dirt. But I mean, like, it did not, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. Like,
well, is he a couple of years ago, you and I went swimming at a ravine. And you had some goggles on. It was like 4 years ago,
no,
or something. You had some goggles on.
I was seven.
Okay, so like seven years ago, you jumped into a ravine with some goggles on, and you still have that scar.
Yeah, I still have the scar under my eye.
So it's like, you know, goggle versus two chainmail fists to the face, and it just, you know, I don't know. I just think it got a bit silly. It just, she became too superhuman, and. Anyway, so that to me just became, it was just kind of odd. And she didn't work out, she didn't exercise, she didn't practice, she didn't stretch, she didn't train. So just, you know, going zero to maximum conceivable exertion in your mid-40s with no ill effects. I don't know. It just, maybe I'm a bit oversensitive to that because I'm at that age, I mean, past that age. But
I guess I
love the speech about, sorry, go ahead.
As I say, for me, like with like the superwoman beating up men and stuff like that, once I let that ship sail, all these other details were less less noticeable.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and
also she's really cold and hostile, has no affection, but is a great stepmother.
I was gonna say, I mean, we'll probably get around to the druid girl, but at least she was, you know, when she was doing her massive, you know, fighting thing, she was actually like a freaking owlbear, right? She was actually like a massive creature rather than just her, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But you said you're gonna say something about the speech on magic, and I'd just like to hear what you
said.
Oh
yeah, I love the speech on magic. Yeah, I love the speech on magic because, and this is also what bothered me about the whole helmet thing, because he's saying there's no magic in magic; it's just a kind of technology.
Mm.
And you know, one of the things that bothers me sometimes in computer movies is they just like have the computer do it, or the computer can answer it. And you know, they had that on Star Trek where I guess with ChatGPT it's a little more believable now, but computers aren't magic and magic is not magic. Like, he said, well, can't you just use magic? And it's like, magic is not a be-all and a cure-all for every conceivable problem that you have. And I thought that was a good speech, because as dungeon masters have always had that, you know, well, can't I just get a spell that's going to do it? It's like, no, there are spells that you learn and they have specific attributes and they require specific components. And, you know, you can't be silenced because you have to speak them. And like there's rules and you can't just sort of make up anything that you want. And I thought that was pretty funny. And they left and it's like, well, why don't you just pay with magic? You know, I thought that was a great speech, because everybody who's played has had that speech around at some point in the game, usually. If you're not playing, like if you're playing with people rather than on a computer. So I thought that was really great.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And I was thinking about, like, with the helmet attunement thing, you know, where it just wasn't working for him. Like, they would have to probably do a couple of different things, because he would have to have been wearing the helmet if it was, like, that much of a, you know, power booster for him. Maybe not 24 levels, as you were saying, but, like, I totally see where you're coming from with, kind of didn't earn the attunement, right? It just sort of, like, you know, popped the guy in the face, and that's what it was. It feels like attunement would be, I don't know how it works in game, because I'm not really, you know, much of a D&D guy, but it seems like that should take some time, and, you know, if it constantly rejects you, I don't know if you ever get the chance to, so.
It broke the...
Well, and, you know, aggression is not necessarily the solution to...
Yeah.
Okay, literally, they said that the solution to self-attack is self-attack.
Oh, golly.
Like, they literally have that right there in the movie, because he's constantly putting himself down, right? Yeah. Which he's self-attacking. And then the solution to self-attack is to punch yourself. It's like, no, I don't think the solution to self-attack is self-attack, but anyway.
Yeah.
And even if he did learn all of these spells, is he going to be as good at using these spells the very first time he uses them, as opposed to a wizard who's been doing it for 280 years or so?
Oh, yeah, fair point. Yeah. Fair point.
But now, what I saw that whole arc with him and his confidence and all that stuff was some kind of analogy message for the struggles that I see young women and women in general that are single kind of talk about, where men don't have the confidence to approach them, or the you know, men aren't very not lacking of regret, not aggressive, but they're not approaching. They're kind of,
no, it's like the call from this morning. Yeah,
yeah. They're kind of puttering around, and you know, they're getting in their own way instead of going out. And like you said, like, rip your shirt off, go out there and talk to a lady, you know.
Right.
And so,
right.
That's where I saw that coming in, as a kind of a cultural commentary.
But even at the end, he's like, Would it be okay
if
I try it again? It's like, fine. It's like, no, just ask her out.
And then he gets really excited. He gets really excited, and she's, calm down. Like, really snapped at him. Like, oh, boy. That was like,
ooh. Yeah.
Well, and that's the whole, like, dominant woman thing. Like, all the women were running them in that movie.
Yeah. No, that's, at least they're consistent, I guess.
Well, yeah, because all of the men were serving women, right? The mayor was serving his advisor, and even the main guy was serving his dead wife by trying to bring her back to life, and yeah, well, all of this just disposable male servitude, and of course I don't remember any female guards.
He brutishly didn't
attacking anyone.
I think there might have been one, but that was when they were being distracted. I don't know if there was any in the fight.
Well, and he was
oh, the glitch.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. There was one during the glitch. Yeah.
Izzy, why did we like the glitch so much?
Okay, so many years ago in our role playing, which for those of you who don't know, basically D&D, but like any dice rolling things would be like physical tests instead. So it'd be like, oh, you want to hit that person with an arrow? Okay, throw a ball into this bucket or something like that, right?
That's awesome. Yeah.
And most of it was talking. But anyways, at one point we were trying to get a dragon, because I had befriended a dragon in this story, and we were trying to get him. I think his name was Venomfang, to be a person so it could join us on an adventure, and we were working on a potion for it. And when we first got it, it was really glitchy and bad. So, example, like, when he would walk around, his teeth and, like, nose and stuff would, like, float behind his face as a...
just a little.
A really bad potion, and that's exactly what the spell looked like.
Yeah, because when he would turn his head too quickly, his eyeballs would, like, drift behind a little bit.
Like, so, really bad
just a little
video
bit
game, basically.
Oh my
yeah
gosh.
It was like Skate 3 on steroids, and so it just made for some very, very funny scenes where he would come running into a room but his feet would be a little trailing behind and stuff. So when the main guy was glitching out, we were just laughing hysterically because it really it was very funny
creepy,
and B
though.
It really reminded
I don't
know
us why
of that.
I found it
they did good with it.
I liked it though. It was quite funny. And the
really
guard's reaction, it was so calm. Like, man, I've seen this before. I just want to go home.
And it was like a really good example of just one of many of the magic in the movie. Is like, well, you know, he's doing casting. Was that made? That'd be significant illusion or major illusion, whatever it is, because it's like actually singing and stuff. But he's distracted, so he can't maintain his focus, right? So that was a problem for him, right? I'm assuming that's in the D&D stuff. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. I was gonna ask, what was everybody's favorite scene in the movie for any reason?
Ooh, let me think about that. Y'all go ahead.
Dad, go first.
I mean, there's a lot, because there were a lot of peaks in that movie for me. I think watching the dragon just keep coming, because I thought, well, come on, if the dragon's that fat, it can't be hungry. And then I think, well, what about the obese people I've seen online? It's like, they seem to be doing quite a lot of eating, and the mukbang kind of stuff, like the sort of avocado stuff. So I thought that was very funny as a whole. The glitching, it just had me, again, partly because of her own history with Venom Fang's human potion, just had me in complete hysterics. And I thought it was also just very, very well done, the way the face was sliding down into the neck with the giant mouth. I thought it was just, I'd love to see the outtakes or what else they used about that. I thought, the Hugh Grant sort of politeness. I mean, you could see the joke coming a million miles away, but it's like, but I don't want to see you die, so, which is why I'm going to leave.
Oh, yeah.
It was very funny. Sometimes, like, the jokes you see coming are just nice when they play out, so... there were a lot of but I tell you, from a technical standpoint, holy crap! So the scene where the druid is the fly, listening in at the vault.
Oh yeah!
And then the sorceress, the red wizard woman, she realizes that the druid is in the room as the fly, and then, you know, flies out, becomes the mouse, becomes the hawk, becomes the weird dodo or ostrich dodo thing, and. Like, that whole sequence was just mind-blowing in how they filmed it seamlessly, and all the CGI and the people, and, like, that was just wild to me. I was, like just in awe of... the storytelling was great, but I was just in awe of the literal movie-making magic about how they made all that happen.
Now, that was kind of nice, except for the continuity of, like, the fantasy world... Can a shapeshifter switch forms that fast, that often, and not that was a bit over the top for me. And
Jared, also, is she pretty?
Yeah.
Then she can do anything. Clearly. Because the actress just says to the nerdy animators, you know, it would be really cool.
Fair.
If I was just able to do this, and they're like, yeah, that would be cool. I'll need you to pose for me.
I thought that they actually hit that better initially when she was falling and turned into the cat, like just before she hit the thing, because she was falling as a bird right. for a really long time. It's like, did her shapeshift cool down long enough for her to save herself? And of course it did, but yeah, I don't know if they had that continuity of timing in the other thing.
I was willing to throw all of that out just for that sequence.
I think that when she, what's it called? Oh yeah, when she was hanging off the cliff and just barely made it on, like in the bridge, and they were fleeing from the obese dragon, and the wizard guy, Simon, said, here, take my hand kind of thing, right? Like, it was a big thing and she was about to fall. She could have literally just turned into a bird and flapped her way out of there.
Mm. Yeah.
So, I mean...
No, but he said, take my hand, and she couldn't do that if she had a wing, so she had to do what he said.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding. Patriarchy. Yeah. Okay, so the worst patriarchy in the universe, everyone's run by women. I think those, I mean, I couldn't sort of get it down to one, but those were my sort of top ones for just movie magic. But
My favorite scene would be like the Paladin's one-liners, where like in the course of like 2 or 3 minutes, he just like something about irony, something about I don't even remember the exact dialogue. I just remember laughing, you know, hysterically.
Yeah. And his delivery was fantastic, because that's a tough role to do.
Well, and it wasn't that actor. It was the Simon actor. But when they were walking in the meadow and Rodriguez, her character, gave him some insult at the end, and like his like, oh well, that hurt, or for whatever he said, it's like that was, he delivered that perfectly. That's where he's like, okay,
oh, the brain creatures that walked by them.
That was Chris Pine, and that was a good one, where he's like, oh, that's hurtful, because you know, they didn't attack them because they didn't have enough intelligence. Like,
they only go for the smart ones, and they just amble by him completely.
And then other than that, the other two like kind of sets of scenes I liked were the dragon fights were cool, you know, obvious. But then also
I guess it was like where the liches and the red wizards were doing their spell kind of thing. As I thought from a technical, like just the graphics they did there, that was pretty cool.
So the red wizard fight, do you mean the guy with the helmet and the woman?
So there's two scenes where the red wizards are casting this like terrible spell that comes down and turns everyone into little communist zombies.
Oh, the old one and the new one.
Yeah. And I thought like,
yeah, that was cool.
Where that initial lich was introduced, where she's off on her own, the red wizard. And then in the shadows, like these eyes are glowing and you can barely make out a skull. Like they did that to me, like perfectly to introduce like this really interesting evil bad guy, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
James, have you got a favorite scene?
Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff, a lot of good beats. The one that popped up for me is, I'm not sure if it's a favorite scene, but it's something I really enjoyed. I really like the bit where he's talking about the plan. They're all sort of getting at him about the plan. All your plans fail. I thought that was a pretty good exchange.
Yeah.
It was more about what was going on in my head when I was watching it. But in the very beginning, I was trying to sort of gauge what was going on. And he was in the Chris Pine character was giving his whole backstory. And he kept asking where Jonathan was. Finally Jonathan comes. But before he's like interrupting about Jonathan. And so he's trying to get this backstory. And so the council, you know, says, please get back to it. And he goes back too far when he's telling his backstory. And the thought I had was, I'm like toward like the movie is this realization of people at a table playing. And I had a thought of like Jonathan is delayed by storm was actually a character, like a guy named Jonathan who hadn't come to the table. Although that's sort of not in the movie itself. I just thought that was a funny thought. But I mean, I also liked, I like the depiction of the owlbear, that stuff. That looked like it was. I never really knew what an owlbear was, you know. And I was like, "Wow, that is a terrifying creature, right?" So I got to see a lot of stuff. And I got like some, you know, surface knowledge of D&D, like I sort of mentioned. But I thought there was like all the stuff that I more or less for D&D tropes I recognize. I really enjoyed that broadly, but as a specific scene, yeah, I think like the action stuff and some of the, you know, back and forth. I don't know, say if it's a favorite, but I did like. I got the feels when they were sort of talking. What part was it? I think when they were like having that, you know, realization of he was basically confessing to his daughter about the. I thought that was like satisfying as far as the movie.
Oh, when he confessed about what caused his wife.
Yeah. He stole the marked treasure from the Red Wizard.
Chris Pine has this great. He's very frivolous. And then he'll just uncork this death.
Yeah.
And it's really well done. Sorry, Izzy, you were going to say?
Oh, I was just agreeing. That's nothing more.
Your favorite scene?
Oh, my favorite scene? Oh, definitely the dragon.
Ah, it yeah.
Oh my gosh, when he said, it must have found a new lair. And said, what did he eat the last one? Again, as I previously mentioned, I was laughing so hard at that. So I think it was... the best scene, I think, in my opinion. I just found that so funny.
They did a good job with that. Because it was like, if you're in the situation, you'd be a bit terrified, but also like, good grief, that is hilarious.
Well, and it must be like what the buffet feels like on the cruise ship sometimes.
Yes.
But I was, again, this is just it's an artistic choice. I don't know how well it would have worked, but I can't believe that in a Dungeons & Dragons movie, there was not one dice game. Like, that to me is just such a missed opportunity. Like, even if it was in the background, you know, just somebody playing a dice game, you know, and it would be really funny if they, like, oh, this is my last throw, and they roll a d20, they roll a 1, and then they trip when they walk away from the table. I don't know, just something like that, because the whole game is based on dice,
mm-hmm.
and just... bring some dice into the, like, because dice in games were huge in the Middle Ages, right? So just bring some gambling, some dice, something
interesting
about, I don't know, like, you know, like maybe some woman, she's super attractive, rather than saying she's a 10, it's like, oh, she's a natural 20. Like, just something where you reference the dice in the game, I think would have been really meta and very amusing. I mean, that's just my particular thing.
I wonder if they were avoiding that because of criticism from the first Dungeons & Dragons movie, because the first Dungeons & Dragons movie was like a fourth wall break every 5 minutes, it seemed like, you know.
Okay, yeah, maybe that was it. Yeah, or maybe the fourth wall is a bit too sophisticated for people. but I don't think, because, yeah, I just, or I don't know, there was no, yeah, so I thought it could have been a little bit, but that kind of stuff, if you don't know Dungeons & Dragons particularly well, you just see that there's a dice game going on somewhere in the background or that you could weave into the story.
Fair.
And yeah. It wouldn't be particularly... I wouldn't have everybody say, like, oh, wow, you missed badly. You must have rolled a one. I wouldn't make it sort of that obvious. But just somewhere, they had to have been, I think, some dice. Or I think it would have been interesting. So in every Dungeons & Dragons group, there's the one guy who knows every rule.
Yeah.
And he is so punchable.
He is so punchable.
No, he is. Like, because you describe some monster, right? And back in the day when there were two major books. There was the Monster Manual and the Fiend Folio, which had all of the monsters in it. Mm-hmm. And each one of these monsters has, like, a description, a picture. They have, like, 20 different attributes, like their armor class, their hit dice, their attack speed and all of that, and their special abilities, right? And so... you'd be running a game and you'd want some mysterious monster comes out of the fog or something like that. And you start giving a description. And then there's always some guy who's like, oh, that's this kind of monster. They have 4 hit dice and they have these special abilities and they have this, that, and the other, and they can do this and they can warp to the left 3 feet. And it's like, oh my God, can you just give people some excitement? Like, I don't know what this is. How do we fight it? That's some interest and excitement.
I can see doing that like a couple times, but like, if it's like a really important fight, but like a bit of, yeah, that can be really annoying.
Can we build up to this a bit?
No, but every dungeon master has a way of dealing with that character, by the way.
Uh-huh.
It's called the hidden arrow from nowhere. Yeah. You can be that guy, but you will get the hidden arrow from nowhere.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right, and it's like it's got a voice paralysis. Like, even if you can't kill the guy because he's got like 50 hit points and an arrow is only D6, right? So, but even if you can't kill him, you've got to give him some sort of voice paralytic poison. You know, oh, it's a tree venom, a tree frog venom that paralyzes you. I can't talk, right? Because you have to find a way to shut that guy up.
Yeah.
I don't know. So in some, it would have been kind of funny somewhere to have some one with encyclopedic knowledge that was just annoying to everyone, because again, that would be a little bit of an in joke for the players, but that is something that would definitely have hit people where they hurt in Dungeons and Dragons.
I think there was something that was a bit close.
I've made like a few Dungeons and Dragons campaigns, but pretty much just for my parents, and when we were playing, I would make up my own adventures and my own monsters and stuff so that they wouldn't know, because my dad obviously has a lot of experience with D&D, and I'm like, I don't want you to know the creature, so I think I made something called...
Look up nothing.
Yeah. So
I think I made something called like a glitch, and there's another one called a sallow worm, which is like a bit like a salamander, but like, again, like a mix, a sallow worm, but not the most creative.
Oh, nice.
But a few other things, of course. I can't think of them all right now, but I would just come up with stuff because I'm like, nope, you know too much.
I think there was something that is a little bit like that. So when they first got to the Underdark, before they got to the Hanging City, they had to cross this bridge. And so the paladin starts describing how they have to cross the bridge.
Oh, yeah.
So he starts just completely dryly. He's like completely standing stock in front of them with like completely scarred the bridge, maybe like a whatever. And he's like, hey, you have to go. I can't even begin to say how it was.
Yeah.
And then, of course, so that's like encyclopedic knowledge of how to cross the bridge. And it's like insanely complicated. And, you know, then, of course, the Simon guy, you know, natural one, steps up, puts his foot on what was the bridge. And actually, I did find that amusing in the moment.
It was quite funny. Yeah.
The
dry humor and the pauses and the comic timing I thought was fantastic, which is kind of unusual for this kind of film. I mean it was almost like Monty Python in some areas, just in terms of the absurdity, and of course, you know, there's very little humor in Lord of the Rings.
So this
had that kind of, it had a kind of a joyful anarchic energy to it, which I found really, really, really fun.
Yeah, it did. I definitely like, I love comedy, I love action, and I love fantasy. And this was like a mix of all three. So for me, that's one of the main reasons I liked it so much. Obviously, like, the wokeness was kind of built into any movie that comes out nowadays. So I just kind of put that aside and focused on the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Overall, it did those pretty good. Like, to me, this was perfect popcorn movie. You know,
it was really good.
So I guess, yeah, two questions to leave everyone with. Would you watch it again? And would you watch a sequel?
Yes. And yes,
I would be so scared of watching a sequel in case they ruined it. But I'd obviously, if it was made by the same people, then yes, I would watch the sequel.
Yeah, I'm a yes on both.
I think it would have to be, yeah. Okay. Ooh. Yeah, I think so. I would be interested. I'm sure that Chris Pine was also an executive producer in this, so I think he probably has some Dungeons & Dragons experience and wanted, because he's got the kind of star power that could make a movie like this happen, and he is so ridiculously watchable and so ridiculously chock full of charisma,
yeah,
that, you know, he's just, I mean, his delivery has always been just so dry and witty and natural and funny. I think if he was involved and whoever the writers and executive producers, assuming they didn't let the sort of success, which I hope the film enjoys, go to their head,
yeah,
I would definitely watch it
again. Oh, yeah, me too.
I'll watch it. I would watch this one again because I'm sure there's a few things I missed.
Yeah, maybe like your dice game.
And sometimes, honestly, like, I don't mean to sound overly pretty, but sometimes with the plot, I'm just like, okay. Like, I'm not quite sure why they're doing this, but it's like a roller coaster. I'll just go with it.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, at the very beginning, I could probably find this small clip on YouTube or something when it comes out officially, but it was, I saw this, at the beginning, I did not make out, like, a word they were saying for the first, scene or two. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was. I mean, it got better later, and I don't have bad hearing, but it was just, like, I could not figure out anything they were trying to say.
Mumblecore.
Yeah, honestly. When it got to the actual, like, when he started, you know, I need Jonathan here. Where's Jonathan? Like, in the room where he was trying to get let out of prison. It was probably better. I could make out everything there, I think. But it's just that first scene or two is like, what is going on here?
Yeah. Well, and with the orc, right, is the first one to speak, or one of the first ones to speak, and it's like, you know.
It is, yeah. I was, like, worried it was going to be, he was one of the characters, and I was going to spend the whole movie, but he got punched pretty fast, so.
Oh, yeah, what was it? I was out for a brunch with Izzy the other day. Do you remember the waiter? Was like, gotta take your order? And I was like, did you do a lot of karaoke last night? And he's like, no, what are you talking about? It's just my voice. I'm like, oh, it's very, very manly.
He's like, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's right. It's like Vegas voice. You know, like when I first went to Vegas, it was always the same guy. Like everywhere I went, like everyone in the cab or a waiter is like, oh, that Vegas voice, right?
Ooh.
Like, oh, are you from Vegas? No. I came here, I don't know, bachelor's party 7 years ago. I just never left. Like, that was just, everybody was the same guy in Vegas. Maybe it's changed.
It probably that was just something changed. I noticed. They just leveled up, become older.
They just leveled up. Yeah,
that's right. Just got the right
level. Level 7 Vegas.
Just all right, now themselves in the past.
Now, Steph, we went to, me and James actually went and saw the show with another friend. And we were chatting about it afterwards, and he had a UPB question. Would you like a surprise UPB challenge?
I love UPB. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and this is from the movie, of course.
This entire show is me staggering from one UPB question every 6 months to another. Everything else is just filler.
All right. Well, he'll be glad I brought this up. And so he was talking about, like, man, I hate the whole, like, Batman quote unquote morality in these kinds of movies where, you know, catches the villain, doesn't kill him, puts him in a cage, and, you know, it's just they get out, they do more destruction. It's like, and they do this over and over and over again. You know, the guy's going to break out. Why don't you? And they violated UPB, kill him. You know, so he's talking about, like, where, and my apologies if I misphrase his question and James can catch me on it, or his, like, yeah, thoughts about this. But it's like, okay, so where the Forge, the, what was his, what the audience doesn't know who Forge is, who is he was the guy
Hugh Grant.
That
he was Hugh he Grant. The mayor
he was the mayor. Okay, and so he had betrayed everyone and they're trying to escape on a ship, and Michelle Rodriguez beans him with a potato. And as he, because he had a knife to Kira's throat.
Yeah.
And he drops the knife. Kira gets on the ship. They get on the ship. And he's like, what? Why did they let him go? Why didn't they kill him? Like, he's a UPB violator. He's just...
What,
like,
at that time?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, because, well, first of all, they summoned the wave.
Yes.
And the wave disabled the mayor and also pushed them out to sea.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think it would have been kind of tough to go back and catch him at that point.
And that was my rationale. It was given that circumstance, like, either A, he's knocked out by the potato, which he wasn't, in which case, is he a threat immediately in the moment? Beyond that, it's like, but what actually happens is they get the wave. He, of course, he is pointing a crossbow at him, but the wave takes care of that and pushes them out to sea. So, yeah, later on, like, they didn't really have an opportunity to make a judgment on there. And then at the end, it's a paladin that comes across them, and he's no threat to the paladin. He's not even attacking the paladin. So, of course, the paladin's going to
the paladin doesn't know that he held a knife to the kid's throat or anything, right?
No.
Well, and I don't know. Hold on. I have to challenge that. Because the paladin's wise, he's got two brain cells to spark. He could know that, like, and he knows the history of this guy and the kind of
what? No, he wasn't there when the mayor held the knife. He wouldn't know that because he's wise.
Not that particular thing, but he knows he's this corrupt, evil governor of this town.
Right. So if you think somebody's corrupt, you just get to kill them? Is that the UPB question?
No.
With no due process, no trial, no defense?
No.
Because then anybody can come up, like, do you want that if somebody thinks you're corrupt? Somebody might think I'm corrupt.
Yeah.
And they just come up and stab me, right? It's like, do you want that to be a rule that you could live under? No, everybody get their due process, their just defense. And the reason why you have prison sentences that are relatively short is, look, some people do learn and some people do improve.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's for the protection of the people who arrest everyone, right? So if, let's say, there's the death penalty for everything, then everybody will simply fight to the death.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And you won't be able to find anybody to be the police, right? So the more harsh the punishment, the more fierce the resistance. And then you can't get any police because they'll all just get killed or... they'll be in a fight to the death for, like, jaywalking and stuff. So,
well,
you have to have, I think, those kind of limits.
And
partly for justice and also that the punishment fits the crime, and also because you don't want to give everyone an incentive to fight to the death every time somebody wants to arrest them. Sorry,
go ahead. Yeah. And in a just society where UPB matters, but I repeat myself, then they're going to be ostracized, you know, or prison's going to be some aspect of voluntary, you know, a la the future. You know.
Why did the mayor want to raise that kid? Because I found it towards the end when the mayor's just like, fine, I'll hold a knife to her throat. I was like, come on.
That's one of the... Did
I miss something?
They did a fantastic job of explaining that, in my opinion.
Why is that?
It makes me a god. He said it makes... They hit that right on the head. It makes me a god.
No. Okay. So being a father makes him a god, but then killing the kid would remove that godhood from him.
But that is perfectly consistent with that kind of malevolent, narcissistic mind, because he's her god to mold and shape her and all this stuff.
And kill as God sometimes does, right?
He's this malevolent kind of god, you know? What did he say? I'm a governor or something like that, and a god. I'm doing all right. You know? Oh man, they hit politician to the T. You know?
That's true. And also, like, claim that you love the children, but then use them to your own ends whenever necessary. I stand corrected. That's it.
Yeah, that is actually a good point. I did not think of that.
And on the note of dispatching a threat, say, who is directly threatening you, they did beat up and, you know, dispatch the Red Wizard. Now, they didn't show an actual death, but, you know, the owlbear was, like, you know, slamming her around.
Oh, you're true. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
She was the one who was actually doing the killing, although he enabled it. And
yeah,
he survives because he's trying to flee and gets thrown in prison. And then, we don't know. We get an epilogue, essentially, with the...
I think, according to my analogy, they went full Pinochet on the Wizard.
Could be.
That was a pretty awesome scene, though, because it's rare that they just kill the villains. Again, as we were saying earlier, like, they always just, redemption arc.
Yeah, the villain falls away into a hole or something. But yeah, this one was like torn apart like a rag doll.
Yeah, and yeah. Like when she started moving, just started playing around again. It's like, okay, yep, you're dead. Which yeah. I liked a lot. I mean, it's so rare that you ever see that happening. So I was fine with it.
I must have missed it that she actually got torn up. I thought she got covered by bricks.
No,
which
she didn't get torn up. She was
good
just,
as dead, but.
She was covered by rubble fell on her.
Yeah,
body.
Yeah. So it is. I mean,
yeah. She hit the wall, and then the rubble fell.
Yeah, she didn't get torn up.
That's not an analogy at all, is it? No, sorry.
I missed that.
Hitting the wall.
Sorry.
Oh,
yeah.
Hitting
I think
the wall.
Thrown
oh,
around
okay,
like a rag doll
okay.
rather than torn up. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, no. I was just asking about the analogy. Okay, I got it after you said hitting the wall.
Yeah, well, that's you know, that's what they say about. Women who are 300, they really do hit the wall, right?
Obviously. Any time before that, obviously
300, that's, you know, you got to watch out.
Yeah, it's 30 or 300. I can't remember exactly, but they really hit the wall. Maybe at 30, you hit the wall. At 300, the wall hits you back, like just falls
on you. It's
just,
it's done with you. It's like, you've hit the wall too much now.
Yeah. All right, we should probably stop so we don't end up with a review longer than the actual movie, but really, really great thoughts. So, I mean, for me, very enthusiastic thumbs up. I hope they keep going, and I hope that they retain the same team because I think it was a really winning combo. And I was willing to overlook some of the wokey stuff because I thought that they just really had hit some other stuff really, really well. So, you know, all sins are forgiven for me.
Yeah, I thought it was a really great movie.
I like on the woke stuff, they hit some woke stuff. There's a level of woke they didn't touch. And if they had gone there, would have absolutely ruined it for me, you know, but they didn't, you know.
Well, we would have ruined the movie as well because nobody would watch it and it would be hated on and it just would not go well.
Well, but, you know, if they were receptive to like feedback, you would have thought that would have mattered 10 years ago. You
know? Yes, true. Good point.
No, but I think these guys wanted to make a story and had to make some concessions to general sensibilities rather than the story is a vehicle to program the population into a general ideology. So I think they had a journey and they had to make some sacrifices along the way, but the journey was great storytelling rather than the journey is to program the population. So kudos to them for that because that's sort of not the most common thing these days.
Yeah, they did a good
job.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. And I guess we'll also hear what other people have to say about this.
Yeah, leave your replies in the comments. And definitely, if you haven't watched the movie and are just watching this, I would definitely watch it. Try and support the creators if you can, because really good, and I think they deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. Worth the ticket, I would say, for sure.
Yeah.
Well said.
Have a good rest of your evening, everybody. Bye.